So if I was thinking about the topic about the night shiur, about the nemunas of the night echad, when it comes to checking your shatnez, there's a fascinating shiur. Really, my Mr. Shiur Lachamayt. Somebody asked me a couple of weeks ago the following: if they went to get a certain jacket checked for shatnez, and the shatnez checker told them that in fact there was shatnez in it. Not so common today, but whatever they found, there actually was shatnez in the jacket. They had the shatnez removed, and then apparently they had bought the exact same jacket as their father had bought as well. And the father had gone independently to go get his that same jacket checked for shatnez with a different shatnez checker, and that other shatnez checker reported back that there was no shatnez in the jacket. So there's a little bit of a confusion. So there seemed to be a little bit of a contradiction between the two Adim. So they called up the company and they asked, is it possible that one would have something and one would not? The company said it would be really, really one in a million chance that such a thing would happen. Highly unlikely, which really leads us to believe now, one of the shatnez checkers was making a mistake. Again, we're not accusing anybody of intentionally making a mistake, but clearly one of them had the wrong information. Now the question is, what do you do from here? So the person who already had the shatnez removed, so the shatnez was already removed and finished. So the case is done deal already. And the shatnez, whatever supposed the shatnez was already removed. So that was the end of the story. The question is whether the other person would be permitted to wear the jacket that he has, and then to make matters even worse, that the son that had the shatnez removed told me that he sometimes borrows jackets from his father. So now he wanted to know that according to his understanding, according to the shatnez checker he had checked with, that told him that there was shatnez in the jacket, the father may not be particularly interested in getting this quote-unquote non-shatnez removed. And now the question is really twofold. So number one, if I know for a fact that one person has said one thing, someone else has said something else, where does that place me? And number two, where does it place me? Even more serious, if I'm the one who asked the person who told me that it was actually quote unquote trade, but actually that shot is in it. So that started me thinking about all these issues related to the Nemunas of Bnei Echad as it relates to checking shatnez, the Isurim, etc. So we try to learn a little bit of the sugya and try to come up with some kind of conclusion how we should play out in halacha.
There's something that you're leaving out, that garments are made in foreign countries, they're not necessarily made in factories that you think of. So if one has it, all have it, or none have it, one doesn't have it, none have it. They give it out privately to people to work on in their homes. And you could very well get one jacket that has it and one jacket that doesn't, depending where it was made.
Right, so that's what we try to write. So that's what we try to ask. Right, so that's what we try to ascertain from the company. And again, I wasn't privy to all the details. I wasn't, okay, I don't know, maybe that's the answer, okay, we have to end the show, but maybe that's the answer. We're going to work now with the assumption that it was the identical jacket, and there seems to be a little bit of a discrepancy in terms of what the reports are. But maybe you're right, maybe you're not, I don't know what the ultimate facts are. I don't know, I can't tell you, that I can't tell you. Okay, so let's use this as an opportunity to try to discuss some of the issues related to Monos of Bnei Echad. But before we even get to the issue of just how much we trust the person, especially when it's contradicted by somebody else, why are we checking the first thing? Is there any real need, la-halacha, to check for these kinds of things? So we begin with the first sugya, which those who are learning about Chulin, the third pack of Chulin, who lost someone between the intricacies of Hilchos Treifos. Hopefully we'll appreciate this perhaps even more. We start with the first of the Marvikomos, it's a Rashi and the second Chulin. The Rashi and Chulin that the Beis Din Aleph tells us that there is a principle that we follow rove, we follow the majority. That there must be some tradition that we have going all the way back to Moshe Rabbeinu, that we rely on rove when there's a majority that something is permissible. So we're permitted to rely on that majority. Even though it's theoretical, it's possible to be mevarer, it's possible to find out the facts on the ground, we are not obligated to do so, because we have the principle of a rove. So Rashi first is telling us that the source for this idea is a tradition, it's an old tradition, it doesn't have any roots in the Chumash proper. Or Inami Rashi says, maybe it does appear even in the Tarshi B'Chtav, Achri Rav Lahatos. Perhaps based on the passage that appears in Pashas Mishpatim, when you have a Din Torah and two judges say one way, and the other judge says the other way, you follow the majority. So Rashi says that maybe that's the source for the principle of following Rove. So we're not exactly sure. We know that we live our lives based on the principle of Rove. We follow majority. But we don't know whether the source of following majority is just pure tradition, ish v'pi ish ad Moshe Rabbeinu, just an oral tradition. Or maybe it actually has its roots in the Torah Shebichtav itself. The reason why Rashi is a little bit hesitant to apply this pasuk about Haram Lahatos, the case of Rove, is because the Gemara in Masechet Chulin, the first part, differentiates between two different kinds of robes. So we call a Ruba de Isa Kamon, in contrast to a Ruba de Leisa Kamon. A Ruba de Isa Kamon means, literally, the robe is in front of us. We can actually count it up. We can make a tally of 10 stores, or 9 stores that sell kosher meat. One store sells non-kosher meat. We find a piece of meat on the floor, so we're allowed to follow the robe. That's called the Ruba de Isa Kamon, because, again, we can count. 1, 2, 3, or 5, count 9, count 1. It's an obvious rove. The Ruba de Leisa Kamon is a little bit less clear than that. The Ruba de Leisa Kamon means we make some kind of a statement, some kind of a statistical analysis on something, even though nobody ever really counts, but it's actually impossible to count. Let's say, for example, as we're learning the third bet of Chulin, so there are a lot of things that can go wrong with an animal that can make it into a trefa. You can have a hole in the heart, a hole in the lungs, a hole in the stomach, etc. There are many, many things that can go wrong. But the reality is that most animals don't have problems. Most animals are not walking around with holes in their heads, holes in their hearts, holes in their stomachs, etc. So rove the hamas are ain on trefos. But there are some animals that are trefos. So that's not a rove the isa kamon. Nobody actually sat down and counted all the animals in the world. Just that we assess, we see that animals are not just falling and dropping dead, they're right and left. So it must be that most animals are in fact healthy animals. So that's what's called the rove the isa kamon. So a Ruba de Leisa Kamon may not have its roots in Acharei Mahatos, because Acharei Mahatos is talking about three judges, and you can actually point to count the judges. So Rashi's not sure. Rashi's not, you know, he's not sure what is the source for this idea that we follow both of these kinds of roads. Is it based on Halacha L'Moshe M'Sinai, or are both roads based on Acharei Mahatos? Rashi continues. Because maybe Acharei Mahatos Mashma, they move the Isa Kamon, they move the Leisa Kamon, the Maishno Haimehai. Maybe both roles are similar enough to one another that they can both be derived from the same pasuk. So again, Rashi is not sure, but everybody knows that we do follow roles. And now Rashi says, Lamaisa, what does that mean for us? It is based on this principle of following the majority. We do not check Kol Yudches Trefos. We do not check all the 18 different main categories of Trefos. The holes in here, the holes in there, and the broken there. None of that. Nobody checks animals today and opens up the animals and starts checking the hearts, and somebody checks the brains, and somebody checks the intestines. Nobody does that anymore. Nobody ever did that. Why? Because we have a row, because there's an overwhelming majority that there is no problem in the first place. However, Rashi says, when the kubas harea, there is one type of a trefa that we do check for until today as well, and that is holes in the lungs, other kinds of things that indicate that there are problems in the lungs, what are called tzirchas in the lungs, different lesions, different problems in the lungs that indicate that there may be holes there. Why all of a sudden do we check the lungs? We don't check the head, we don't check the stomach, we don't check the intestines, we check the heart. Why do we check the lungs? Mishum d'shchiach b'reyusa b'tinan, because it is more common to have a problem. Reyusa means to have a problem. It is more likely to have a problem. And again, it's not the majority of a problem. Most animals don't have problems in the lungs either. But this is what the Rishonim coined the phrase. It's called the Miyud HaMotzui. If you have a Miyud HaMotzui, we have a significant minority, a significant percentage, even though it's not a majority. The Mishkenos Yaakov, one of the Talmidim of Rechaim V'Lozhin, so he writes in the Shuvas, and that's the number that we usually accept today, 10%. He writes that if it's a 1 in 10 chance that there is a problem, that's called the Miyud HaMotzui, and you have to check for that. If it's less than a 1 in 10 chance, then you don't even have to check for that altogether. The Hechi de Isrami, and what would happen, says Rashi, the Ifrisha Revelo Bada. What if the lung was never checked? You checked it in animal, you put the lung aside to check it, and then it got thrown into the garbage. Nobody ever checked the lungs. Rashi says, Miss Achwa, you're allowed to eat the animal. You don't have to check the lungs. If the Dieved, you couldn't check it, the lungs disappeared, you're allowed to eat it. There's some Chidinaha that we rely on the road. So the halacha of checking the Mir HaMotzui is only a lechet chilo. There's another Gemara that all seems to point in this direction. Rashi has three fascinating words. Rashi says, don't tell anybody this. Rashi says, don't publicize this. People are going to think that you're crazy, even treifas. But the din is that l'chatchil, you have to check the lungs. The d'yevet, if you didn't check the lungs, the meat is still kosher. What about checking the other treifas? Not even l'chatchil. There's no need, there's no hiddur. Nobody does. We don't do that either. Adayim is that. We check the animals, we check the lungs. Nobody checks the hearts and the brains and the intestines, etc. Because we have such a robe that it's not even a minimum. So the post can point out that this is also true in other areas of halacha. Our example, case of shatnez. Are we even obligated to check for shatnez in the first place? So the answer to the question is, well, what are the numbers? What are the statistics? Well, if the statistics are that there's well over 90% of these kinds of clothes out there that do not have shatnez altogether. If that is the case, then there's no need to check for it altogether. The same way we don't check the hearts of animals, we're not obligated to check the suit either. However, if you have a minhag motzui, if there's more than a 1 in 10 chance that there is a problem of shatnez, so that would be a problem. Now, it's kind of hard to make that assessment because it probably depends on the kind of suits. Let's say there are, most suits probably don't have a shatnez in them, but 90% of the suits are very, very inexpensive suits. But I have a very, very expensive suit. So if I have a very expensive suit, so then I have to figure out, well, what's the robe, what's the minhag motzui of these kinds of suits? It's not even so easy to tell that. It was a very insignificant amount of times. No, it's true. It's a rule that governs all of halacha, that if there's a robe and there's no miram botsui, then one doesn't have to be worried about it. Right. It applies, right. We apply this in checking for insects, for vegetables also. It's the same basic principle. If you have a type of a vegetable that if there's a miram botsui, if there are bugs in that kind of a vegetable, then you have to be checked. If it's not a miram botsui, then you don't have to check. That's what a lot of the hashkachas and vegetables do. That they try to reach the point where we clean it to the point where it's an overwhelming, such a high percentage that there's no problem anymore. So it reaches past the point of being a mutant. Yeah. Right. So I think when he uses the word reisa here, he almost means, you're right, that reisa almost gives off the image that it's not an absolute problem. It just means that there's a suspicion of a problem. But I think that Rashi here is using the term reisa in terms of problematic, things that are going to be kashrus problems. So I'm not sure he's using it in the absolute pure sense of a reisa, meaning that it's not really yet a problem. I'm not sure. Right. I think Rashi here is talking almost in more general terms as to race in the sense of it's a problem. It's going to be a halachic problem. So if there's less than a 10% chance of a halachic problem, then we're not worried. Whereas the ray has more than a 10% chance of a halachic problem. You're right. I agree. The terminology is not 100% accurate. Right. I agree. So again, we're working with the assumption that it's maybe very hard to know whether we have a mira motzi or not, so we're going to insist on checking things for shanis. That's not practical today because we buy the suit. We tell them we should get a check for shanis. Who's going to go to get a check for shanis? The Torah says, Apushinai made him Yachum David. You have to go to two witnesses. So the answer is no. You don't have to go for two witnesses. All you have to do is get one witness because this falls into the category called a echad netman bisurin. The Torah tells us in a few places that unlike monetary cases or capital cases or other types of issues, marriage, divorce-related issues, which require two witnesses, issues that relate only to issa v'hefta, whether food is kosher or not, or in this case, whether the garment is shatnez or not, one can trust even one witness in this matter. That's the chiddush. I would have thought, that if you have to find that I have a suffix, the only way to verify my suffix is I have to get Adam to testify. So that's not so much when I go to Rav to Shaila, it's not so much that I'm trusting the Rav. I'm presenting I know all the facts, and I'm presenting to the Rav maybe what the halachic viewpoint is. Whereas here, I'm going to find the facts. I have no idea if the Shatnez is inside this column or not. I'm going to get somebody's to present to me what the facts are. The same way when I ask somebody, was this animal shechted or not? I ask the person, are there any bugs in this lettuce or something? So I'm going to somebody to provide the facts for me. And then I have to come on to Hilchos Eidos. So I would have thought that there's a din about Pishnah Eidim. I'm going to do Eidim. So that's what Rashi is quick to point out. The second of the Mamikomos, the second Gittin. In the Shani Erechim and Bisurim, the Gemara says explicitly in Gittin that you do not have to go to two Eidim. One Eid is believed. Rashi explains, how do we know that? How do Chazal know that? Shereh Hamina Torah Kalechet V'yechem Yisrael. Allah Freshes Truma, V'Allah Shchita, V'Allah Nikra Agid V'Achel. Rashi gives four examples where it is obvious, as Rashi, that the Torah trusts everybody. The Torah never said that I can only eat in my own house. The Torah never said I can't trust somebody else. So Freshes Truma. The farmer tells me that he was not for Truma, so I believe him. The person tells me that he shechted, so I believe him. The person tells me that he removed the Gid Anoshe, I believe him. The person says there's no mechelev in this animal, so I believe him. Unless you're going to insist that everybody can only eat their own food, everyone has to be a shechet and a farmer and a person who cleans up the Gid Anoshe, everyone has to do everything for themselves. The Torah clearly didn't set up such a system. It's built into the normal system of living that people are relying on one another. How could you rely on one another? It must be that Erech Mem Bitzurim.
As opposed to just juggling with factors, and either it is or is not kosher.
Right, because the reason why I think everyone's having trouble with this is that we've been so convinced by Chazal for the last 3,000 years that that's true. Because our mindset is correctly so that we don't really need to aid them. We don't have to go to court. We need two witnesses to testify. We just have to find out the facts. And everybody knows that Echen Embi Tzurim. That's exactly what we're trying to figure out. How does Chazal know that? Where did that come from? So the start, the Chumash never speaks about it explicitly. The Torah speaks about it. If you don't know what to do, you find two witnesses to tell you what to do. But here, the halacha says Erechen is good enough. So Rashi is searching. How does Chazal know that's true? Rashi says there is no pasuk that tells us Erechen Embi Tzurim. It's just the normal system that obviously the Torah accepts that people are eating in each other's houses. So that's predicated on Erech and Nisur. So according to Rashi, there's no absolute pasuk that says Erech and Nisur. It's just an assumption of the entire system. So unlike Rashi, Tosfos has a different assumption. Tosfos says in the third of the Mamakamos, Erech and Nisur. V'yim Tomo, Menolim Erech and Nisur. Tosfos poses the question, where does it come from? Menolim Elim. So the Yeshlama tells us actually comes up with the drasha. The Afida Minida, the Dashinu Brekamad, the Suffer Laliatma. The Torah says that when a woman counts 7 days, it's called Shiva Nikiyim, so then it says the Suffer Law, she counts for herself. What does that mean, the Suffer Laliatma? Nobody's checking that she's telling you the truth. How do you know? So the woman comes and she says she counted 7 days, she went to the mikvah. How does the husband supposed to believe her? So the Torah never insisted on Edim. The Torah says the Suffer Law, but she counts for herself. So Tosfos says that must be the source that when it comes to Isurim, you're allowed to believe a person. You don't have to go look for a second witness. So Tosfos says Chazal must have extrapolated. Just as a woman is believed to say that she finished counting her Shiva Nikiyim, so too the farmer is believed to say the food is tumors of ice have been taken off, and the shechet believed to say that the meat was shechted properly. And for our purposes, the shatnez shechet is believed to say that he removed the shatnez, or there's no shatnez in the altogether. All derived from the Sofra Loli Atzma. So unlike Tosfos, other Rishonim say this is not true. The Ramban argues that this is not a valid source at Echen and Bisurin, because there's a very, very big distinction between the two. Argues the Ramban that here it's impossible otherwise. Imagine if the Torah would give us a system that you have to have two Edom to tell me that if a woman finished Shiva Nikiyim, it's ridiculous. Obviously that's impossible. So the fact that the Torah accepts such a concept of trusting the woman, that doesn't lead us to believe that you can accept in other areas of halacha. Maybe when it comes to shechita and nachanam, you do need two eidim. Maybe when it comes to shanis, you have to have two eidim to testify it's not shanis. You have to have two people tell you there are no bugs in the vegetables. How do you know? Just because your wife is believed in Shiva Nikiyim, that doesn't necessarily translate to mean that any person is believed as an eidecha. So other Shem disagree with us. Because this fixes their position, Tosfos is told that the source for eidecha and misur is derived from bita. So then Tosfos turns the din on its head. In Tobar, in Kerafilu is Chazik Yisur. The Gemara says in the Sechet Gittin, in the Sechet Yevamot, that it's quite possible that an Erechad is not believed if there's a Chazokah working against him. If the status quo was that it was Osir until now, and now the Erechad is coming to tell you that things have changed, it's not so simple that the Erechad is actually believed. In a case where I have no idea what happened, I don't know whether this is a discussion or not, I don't know whether the Shatnez, I have no idea what's going on, then the Gemara says that I definitely believe. But if I know for a fact the last week that this has been usher, now a person tells me something's changed, not so simple. It also says if the source is from Nida, so then the Nida is telling you that her status has changed. We know she was a Nida, and now she's telling you she's no longer. So it also says no. The Yishlama, the Ein of Cheska Shtei Ruach Osha, who Shabu Shiva Tahorim in Neila, who is Chazik Yisur Begam Yadu Mishvah. So it's right that when a Nida tells you, a woman tells you that she's not a Nida anymore, that's not called going up against the status quo, because that status quo was never really there for very long altogether. Because this is what many folks can record in the phrase, Chazak Asir Lishtane. It's a status quo that changes all the time. A woman, for 2 weeks, she isn't either, 2 weeks, she's not, back and forth, back and forth. So since it's something that's so easily changed, and it's something that she can just simply go to the mikvah and change, it's something which is not considered to be a chazoka going up against the status quo, and therefore the Erechon would in fact be believed. So when all the dust settles, everybody agrees the woman is believed to say she went to the mikvah. And the sheikh is believed to say she has to be out. And the farmer is believed to say he took off two devices. The guy in the bashkir in the back of the restaurant is telling you that he cleaned the vegetables for no more bugs. And the shahadah sheikh is telling you that he checked the shahadah, no shahadah, he removed the shahadah. So when all the dust settles, everybody agrees that Erechon is believed to be serious. So now the question becomes, what do you do when you have a contradiction between two eidim? One day tells me the meat is kosher, the other guy says it's not kosher. One guy tells me there are bugs in the vegetables, the other guy tells me there's no bugs. One person tells me there is shahadah, and the other fellow tells me there's no shahadah. So what do I do? So the Gemara says that the principle called Erechon ba'choshel afklum. When you have a contradiction between two eidim, so you throw them both out. So we don't know what to do. So we just tell me. So it depends. If a person is a Shabbatar mitzvah and he's observant of this area of halacha, so we assume that he's going to tell you the truth. If a person is not observant, that he has any gibbet of it, that's a big, big problem. And the person wouldn't have any money. Let's say you have a restaurant and the guy is telling you that he's an owner, but he's not from. You tell you, yeah, all the meat kosher. He's going to give it up because it's cheaper for him to buy tray for meat. And that's going to be acceptable. The guy doesn't care about kashrus, he's going to tell you that he checked the vegetables. That's not going to help. But if you have a person who doesn't care about shatnas, he himself wears shatnas. He wants to make a quick buck by telling you that there's no shatnas in it. So he clearly will not be believed. But here you have two people that both from the Moshe with their mitzvahs, and they're contradicting each other. So what do? So you throw them both out. So now you throw them both out, and back to square one. So then the halacha is that you have to check the shatnas, unless it's not even a mirah motzu. So al atzad, if it's true that there really is a mirah motzu here, if there's more than a 10% chance that there is shatnas in any given garment, so if that's true, so then you have to get a check, and the erechon who you went to was just contradicted by another erechon, so now you're up the creek, so both erechons, they cancel each other out. So how does that principle play out in terms of our original case, our original scenario? So the person number one, who got the shatnas removed already, so the shatnas removed again, so he doesn't have any more shatnas there. Person number two, so he went to a shatnas checker, and the shatnas checker is a reliable fellow, he's a firm fellow, and he's an erechon, and he told you that there's no shatnas in here. The fact that there's another guy in the world, another shatnas sheikh who told you, forget, told you the opposite, what does that have to do with me? I never asked that other person. I'm not looking to go running around asking a million people. I want to know, was this meat shechted? I go and I ask one person, from the mashgiach in the school, tells me, this is kosher meat. So the erechon is a, mashgiach is a firm fellow, he's an erechon, he's going to be soon finished. I'm looking to go ask another mashgiach, go check 15 other schools at the time. No, I ask one person, I do what the Torah says. The Torah said, erechon, I'm going to be soon finished. I never ask the other guy. The other guy doesn't exist as far as I'm concerned. So the whole of the second fellow is not really obligated to. If he would have asked the other guy and he would have now had a latest suffix, now he has a contradiction, now he's up to kooch. But he didn't ask the other guy. He's not mechuyev to ask the other guy. The person who he asked is an erechon. The erechon told him what the facts are and finished. So I would think that the first fellow who asked the shayla to the guy told him it's treif, he has a problem. The second guy, the first told him it was kosher, so he's okay. So now the question is, the first guy wants to go wear the suit also. The first guy wants to borrow. So that's the
question. Right.
So I'm not sure that that's second A. The reason I'm showing them within the Sugya of Erechon and Bisurin If I ask an erech and the erech tells me something is kosher, so now we say kolmokam shemida Torah erech and erech kishnayim. But that erech now is treated like two people, and now it's either there are two people telling me that it's mutter. Now another guy is telling me that it's osur. That other guy is only an erech. That one erech doesn't have koch against the quote unquote supposed two people. So according to many, we show him once I ask the person. I trust him entirely. He takes other stasa to aid him, and I'm not mechuyif to even if I would subsequently ask another seller, even if the other seller would come and be made to me. I'm not even sure that this is called the other seller being made to me. I'm not even sure that it's yachis to the other person. But there are other people floating around the world who have different opinions about something. I'm not sure that even affects me. If the person came and he told me, I asked him, I had some relationship with him, so then he could argue to nenechim against nenechim. So I'm not sure. I don't know. I'm not sure. But I want to go back to the first fellow. The first fellow now wants to say, I want to borrow my father's jacket. So the first guy to borrow his father's jacket, that's out of the question. So how in the world did he borrow his father's jacket? He for sure is a steer in Erechot. He went to Erechot, and Erechot told him that it's straight. And now another Erechot told him that it's kosher. So for him, it's Erechot b'choshel lafklum. So the two Aedim cancel each other out. So he's back to square one. He's not allowed to wear a jacket. Let's just check the shanit, assuming that there's a mirah motzu, the shanit is there. So again, the second guy, I'm not sure, not 100% sure about. The first guy, I know for a fact, would not be able to wear the other's father's jacket unless he would get it stitched. So now, well, that's the question. But the question is that Rabbi Bruckheim is raising. If Rabbi Bruckheim is, again, I don't know the facts of that part. I'm telling you, if it was a standard kind of a jacket that they were made at the same place and everything is the same, and it's just a discrepancy in terms of the two different shotness checkers. So then our sugya makes sense. Right, even though it's two jackets, but again, no, that's the question. The question is, if those facts are right, that there is no difference between two jackets, it's the exact same jacket, I'll be halacha, because the fact is telling you that's identical. So if that's true, again, it's only as true as the facts are. The facts are true, so then you have a contradiction with the way that. If the reality is that there are really two totally different jackets or two different stories, that's like I asked one person, tell me this chicken's kosher, that's how the other chicken's straight. It's two different chickens, two different chickens. So the lumbers of the shear only make sense, assuming that it's halachic, because they'd be the same job. So then, as we were going through the discussion, so then the first person turns around to me and says, I don't think he meant it seriously. He was just joking. One day when I thought about this, he says, now he wants to know, let's say he'll be able to prove that the first shot in his checker was in fact incorrect. We'll go collect other raisins. You know, we'll end up getting a 2-on-1. So now he's going to prove beyond a shadow of a doubt, luckily, that the first fellow who took apart the shatnez, the disposal shatnez, and cost him money, charged him for taking apart his collar, and he charged him for putting a new, selling a new collar. He closed him now, I think I said, my mom, because he wants to know if he ever right to go claim in Beis Din to get his money back for all the money they had spent on mistaken shatnez checking. Again, assuming that would happen, what's the bid? So I said, well, it's also kashrus slash dinim on mishayla. That's the figure that appears at the end of Masechet Mavakam in the fourth of the Mamakamas. You might tell us, I'm Rav Chana Rav Yechanan. Tavach uman shekil kol chaya. That, let's say I give an animal to a shaykhet, to chef to me, and he makes a mistake. Even though he's a professional, he also makes a mistake. The shaykhet made a mistake, so the shaykhet is chas to pay me. A few uman ki tabachi tzipayri. Even if he's a world-class uman, a world-class expert, the shaykhet, like the butchers in Tzipori, who are known for their expertise, still made a mistake, and he has to pay for it. Yes, the Gemara Mir Rabbi Yochanan Hachi, Rabbi Yochanan really say that. Bama Rabbi Bachana, Uvda Hava Kamed Rabbi Yochanan, the Kedishta de Ma'on. Once it happened that there was a Shah that came in front of Rabbi Yochanan in the Shul in Ma'on, the Amalei, and he said, Zil Aisiraya de Mamchas of Tanagoda Be'apur. The Shaykhet chefed some chicken, and he had made a mistake. So the Yochanan said to him, but just prove that you're a mumpah. Just prove that you're a good shaykhet. You're an experienced shaykhet. You're a qualified shaykhet. And as long as you can prove you're a qualified shaykhet, you can't make a mistake and you're not obligated to reimburse the person for the messed up shaykhet. If the guy would be an amateur, you have no right to shek somebody's chicken, if your mom told him that that's what he's doing, if he's looking around telling people that he's a shaykhet, and it turns out that he's not a qualified shaykhet, then of course he's another mamazik. But in this case, he was qualified. So as long as he was qualified to what he's doing, he just made a mistake. It happens to everybody. So then he's going to be potter. So the Gemara says it's a contradiction between the two words of Rabbi Yochanan. In one case, Rabbi Yochanan said the sheikh who goofs up has to pay. And the other one, in the other case, Rabbi Yochanan said if he makes a mistake, he doesn't have to pay. The Gemara says, no kasha. It depends whether he's getting paid or not. If he's doing you a favor, he's doing you a favor and just shechting you for nothing, so then there's a much less degree of responsibility. Like a shamachinam, and shamachinam doesn't have to pay. If he's getting paid for his job and he messes up, so then he's considered like a shamachachar, and he's a paid watchman, and then he would have to pay. And the Gemara says, Kehadam Rabbi Zeira. Harotish is chayv l'tabach yakim l'dina. If I ask somebody to shech a chicken for me, so if I want to make sure that he doesn't mess up and end up not getting reimbursed, so I should give him a penny, give him a dinar, give him a small amount of money. So here the guy's trying to be a nice guy, he's trying to shech my chicken for me for free, so I don't want to take a chance on him shechting for free because then he's going to mess me up. I'll give the guy a kapar, so I'll give him a nickel and say, yeah, here's my token payment. Uh-huh. And then he messes up, he's going to pay me $100 for the chicken. So the bottom line is, depends on the person's getting paid or not. Will he be held responsible? So if this shatnas checker, I think, is getting paid for his services, since he was getting paid for services, if it really, Glenn Wilson, really turns out that he was in a sense, pasheya, he didn't need to be pasheya, he didn't need to be negligent, but he might have did a bad job. So if you can tell me that, you have 20 other shatnas checkers, they'll all say that the whole thing was lahod from you, the whole thing wasn't shatnas, and that one guy incorrectly took out the shatnas. Of course, we have to know that this is my jack, and he made me pay him to take out the shatnas. Then he paid him to buy for the new thing, and charged me $50 for the whole job. So that's the tavach of Misha Kilko. And since he was getting paid for the job, he would be chayv to pay al tashem misocha. Again, I don't think that the guy was actually suing the shatnas shekhar in the end of the story. He just wanted to hear what I thought in terms of the moment. So here you have a strange and bizarre shayla that touches on Mamish. Say this in terms of. He touched upon the yisod of following a robe. They said that we follow a robe and Efshir Levar, even when we're able to find out. We spoke about the issue of the meal, that we have a motzoi, some of the basic ABCs in terms of the dinim of treifas. Then we spoke about the dinim of Eidech and Ebisurim. Now, everyone agrees there is such a concept. Rashi says it's just based on a simple svara. Rashi says it's based on sukkim and chazokim and mice, the whole complicated muscle like this. Then we have the issue of when you have spheres in Eidim and Yidim, so the Eidim cancel each other out. How does it relate to the different parties? Then you have the end of the sugya is, how does this plan in terms of the Dimominus, if a person is going to be proven to have made a mistake, so is he held responsible for the loss of value that he caused of the item? So depending on whether the Shabbat Shem is Shabbat. So again, a very real shot, Mamash, the shot really happened. It opens up worlds in terms of basics of the Dimominus and Surim, some of the ABCs of things that play out for us, Allah and Mike, in so many different areas of Allah. Okay.
All right.
You have to ask the shot to check it.